Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The year is 1933. Hundreds of thousands of people have assembled outside of Chicago to watch the Frank Phillips Trophy Race. Seven pilots, six men and one woman, soon begin whipping their flimsy planes around large pylons set up across the field. They're flying less than 100 feet off the ground at speeds up to 250 miles per hour. Now, this was a race that changed the course of aviation history, and it's just one of the incredible moments that Keith O'Brien uncovered while researching his new book, Fly Girls, How Five Daring Women Defied All Odds and Made Aviation History. And Keith O'Brien joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much for having me, Meghna.
This is a great book because, you know, when people think of women in aviation history, one of your fly girls pops up in almost everyone's mind, right? Amelia Earhart. But there are four other women here. Can you just run through their names and tell us a little bit about them?
Sure. So, you know, what I've done here is created sort of an ensemble cast, yeah. You know, this coterie of women who were friends. They were rivals. They would, when they crashed, they would rush to each other's bedside and be there for them. So Amelia Earhart is obviously one of those. Ruth Nichols was a daughter of Wall Street wealth from New York City, possibly Earhart's greatest rival in the early 1930s, and also her friend. Ruth Elder was an Alabama housewife who in 1927 was determined to be the first woman to fly across the ocean. This is months before anyone, most people anyway, have heard the name Amelia Earhart.
Right.
Florence Klingensmith, who was possibly the most talented of this bunch, hailed from a small little town in Minnesota. And Louise Thaden, who was the rarest kind of aviator in these days. She was not just a woman who flew planes and raced planes. She was the mother of two young children.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about Florence Klingensmith, right? Because she was the woman in the Frank Phillips Trophy race, right, in 1933.
Right.
Okay. First of all, tell us about the nature of this race. The idea that we would have airplanes flying at 100 feet off the ground around, they're flying around pylons in a field?
Correct. Imagine, the simplest way to describe it possibly is imagine NASCAR in the sky. They would set up triangular courses in a city or around an airfield using 50-foot towers. They called them pylons. And you would take off with a handful of other planes and race around them. So not only did you have to avoid crashing just because you're flying at 250 miles an hour, just, you know, 50 feet off the ground, but you have to avoid crashing into the pylon itself as you make the turn. You have to avoid crashing into one another. And Florence Klingensmith, who was from Minnesota, was one of the best pilots at this kind of flying. It required the utmost coordination, the use of both your left and right hand, you know, one on the throttle, one on the stick,
yeah.
the use of your left and right foot operating the rudders of the plane to make those hard turns. It was very hard to do.
How did she get into aviation?
In the most unusual way. You know, she was the daughter of a farmer. But she was different her whole life. In her little town in Minnesota, she rode a motorcycle at a time when young girls didn't do that. In the little streetcar in her town, she didn't ride in a seat. She would cling to the cow catcher up front, you know, just inches off the rails. She was a daring young woman. And, you know, like a lot of women, she fell into a job that she didn't really want at the time. You know, she ended up working for a dry cleaner in Fargo, North Dakota. But when Charles Lindbergh visits her city on his Goodwill tour just months after flying the Atlantic Solo in 1927, Florence Klingensmith sees him like thousands of people did that day. You know, and she tries to shout to him as he rolls by in his car, you know, sitting on the back of the convertible. And he didn't reply to her. He ignored her. And that bothered her. That upset her. And she said later, she said, and I'm paraphrasing here, you know, I'm going to show him that, you know, Not just a man can do this kind of thing.
Yeah. So this Frank Phillips Trophy race, she was the only woman in the race in 1933. Had women been allowed to fly in the race before that?
No, not in this particular race. Women first earned the right to race airplanes in 1929, but they were only allowed to race against each other. Men didn't have them racing against them. And in the races that they created in 1929, they created all kinds of restrictions on the women that men didn't face. For example, not only did they have pylon races, they'd have transcontinental races, races from, say, Los Angeles to Cleveland. And when the men did these races, they let them fly however they wanted and land to refuel wherever they wanted. The women were forced, when they were finally given the opportunity, to stop in 15 different towns along the way. Because as the men said, and this was their word, we don't think you have the, quote, stamina to do it. And so by 1933, a handful of women have now proven they do have stamina. They do have ability. And because of Florence's particular ability flying in pylon races, she is invited to Chicago by the promoter of the races, specifically asked to come, and then given an opportunity to fly that day. And they make a grand show of it on the field. They announce that this is, we're making history right here. Florence Klingensmith is going to race the men.
Well, I was wondering, Keith, if you might be able to read an excerpt from your book, Fly Girls. And this is a description of that race on the eighth lap of the Frank Phillips Trophy race. Again, 1933, and Florence Klingensmith is flying in a borrowed airplane? A borrowed GB, is that right?
Correct. And the listeners will probably be interested to know the GBs were built right here in Massachusetts. They were built in Springfield, Mass. For a handful of years in the late 1920s, early 1930s. An extremely fast plane and also extremely dangerous.
Okay.
At the home pylon on the eighth turn, roughly 60 miles in, her GB faltered, buckling under a familiar problem. The right wing, the same wing that had doomed GBs in the past, was failing. Fabric whipped away in chunks and fell to the ground like confetti. And with the air now whistling through the holes in her wing, Klingensmith peeled off course. She was flying away from the crowd and the grandstand, then over the spectators and their parked cars at the edge of the safety fence, then beyond the railroad tracks, heading south toward Chicago, then out over the streets of Glenview, in trouble. "Bail out," one pilot on the ground said, pounding his fist into the back of the man standing in front of him. "Jump, Florence. Jump now."
That's Keith O'Brien reading from his book, Fly Girls, How Five Daring Women Defied All Odds and Made Aviation History. I just got the goosebumps just hearing you,
oh, thank you.
Describe what Florence was experiencing. Do you mind if we give a little spoiler? Because I have to ask.
I don't mind.
It doesn't sound so good. What happens to her?
I don't mind. You know, this is the turning point in Fly Girls. And when I stumbled onto this flight, this race, in my research, I knew right then that this was the moment. Because when men crashed in these races, as they inevitably did, and when they died, the men, as they inevitably did, they were often hailed as heroes and given grand tributes on the airfield that very weekend with 21-gun salutes and flybys and their ashes scattered from planes flying overhead. And when the women crashed and when the women died, they didn't get that sort of thing. And, you know, unfortunately, in September 1933, in this moment over the sky in Chicago, Florence is going to crash. And when she goes down, she is going to die. And this happened all the time. But when it happens to a woman, when it happens to Florence racing the men, they blame her. Hmm. They blame her for her failure. And in doing so, they don't even give her the most basic, decent human respect. You know, shipping her body home to Minnesota in a box, naked and wrapped in newspapers. The coroner, when he received the body in her hometown in Minnesota, would later say he'd never seen anything like it. In 50 years of receiving bodies to be buried and prepared for burial, he had never seen anything like it. And it wasn't just that. Because of her death that day, the air races and the air race organizers would make a decision. They would decide to ban the women from racing. You know, no more racing for the women at the national air races. This obviously infuriated the women, Amelia Earhart and Louise Thaden and Ruth Nichols and Ruth Elder and the other leading flyers of the day, and it set up a bitter feud between the male and female aviators that would stretch for years, but ultimately end with the women triumphing in the end.
This is so heartbreaking, but also it sounds so typical, right? That the woman gets blamed for, I don't know what, bad flying, but for, well, actually, what specifically was she blamed for?
It's actually infuriating what they blamed her accident on. In the autopsy that would take place the next day, they would call multiple witnesses. And one of the things that comes out at the autopsy, one of the questions that the coroner has for the witnesses, and including the witness that was called from the air races, was, did you know, he asked, did you know that this woman was on her period at the time?
God.
They blamed her failure to fly with a broken wing on the fact that she was menstruating. And You know, it sounds crazy to us, right? It's sexist, it's absurd, it's demeaning. But rules at the time, written rules under the U.S. Department of Commerce, said that a woman should not fly a plane, operate a plane within 3 days of her menstrual cycle, of her period. And, you know, I found it, I was just blown away. You know, Florence was so talented and she gave everything, literally, her life to do what she loved. And in the end, you know, for that sacrifice, she gets blamed. She gets nothing. The men use it as an excuse to ban the rest of the women. And then maybe one of the worst injustices of all, we've forgotten her.
Yeah. Yeah. It is stunning because even in just the excerpt that you read, just to remind folks, I mean, the plane was falling apart around her. And yet, because of the fact of her biology, she gets blamed for the crash and women subsequently get banned from the race. I mean, it's typical, but also it doesn't fail to be upsetting. But nevertheless, Keith, I mean, you write about how these women changed aviation history, whether or not we knew it today until your book came out. Because it feels like for other women in the group, I mean, I'm thinking particularly of Amelia Earhart now. She obviously became very famous, but met an untimely end as well. How did they change aviation history? Because couldn't we say that for many years thereafter, like you just said, it was still flying kept being a very masculine, very, very macho pastime, sport, job, tradition? So how did they change it?
It's a great question. And you're right, for not just for years afterwards, for decades.
Yeah.
The airlines wouldn't hire they hired their first female pilot as a commercial airline pilot in 1934. It did not go well because the men didn't admit her to the union, and within months she was essentially forced to resign. The airlines would wait 40 more years, 1973, before another woman was hired. I mean, that's the kind of world we're talking about here. But women, these aviators changed things in two fundamental ways. Number one, flying was very dangerous in this era. And by proving that they could do it, by proving that they could fly and they could race and they could win, they helped show other people that flying was possible. And manufacturers knew it. They knew there was value in having a woman fly their plane because of that. The second thing they proved was what a woman could do. You know, we take flying for granted now. It's at best the way we get from point A to point B. At worst, we complain about it.
Yeah.
It's a hassle. At the time, flying was magic. You know, it was the ultimate symbol of freedom. And so if you were someone who could prove it was possible, if you were a woman who could prove you could make it in the sky, well, you proved a lot to other women, other girls on the ground.
Well, Keith O'Brien's new book is Fly Girls, How Five Daring Women Defied All Odds and Made Aviation History. He's going to be reading from the book tonight at the Brookline Booksmith at 7. We'll have more information about that at radioboston.org. Keith, thank you so much for the book, for telling the story of women like Florence and Ruth and Amelia again. And thanks again for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.